This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Samuel. But for now, let's join Pastor Sandy in 2 Samuel chapter 2 with today's study.
There are some battles just not worth fighting. Certainly, there are some causes in life that are worth dying for. Certainly, there are. They're deserving of sacrificial effort. But there are other campaigns just better off abandoned. You know, some of us have spent many, many years now chasing our Abner. Perhaps it's fame, or maybe it's money, or perhaps success. We've been in hot pursuit. We've thrown caution to the wind. We are addicted to the adrenaline. Hey, our chase has become an ego trip. That's what's happened. But have we considered what it'll cost us if we catch our Abner? And if we catch him, will it be worth the sacrifice we've made? It's amazing how the pursuit of a dream can become a nightmare if that dream is not directed by God. It's time we evaluate our motive. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Man from Snowy River. And early in the movie, Jim Craig, he loses a valuable mare in a stampede of wild horses, and Jim becomes fixated on that mare's retrieval, even though a tangle with the wild Brumbies might prove fatal. In fact, Jim's desire to get the mare back is so strong that it blinds him to the fact that he doesn't even own a horse. And that's when his old buddy Spur comes to the rescue. He gives Jim this mountain horse. And he throws in with the horse some important advice. He says, "Forget the mare, you duffer. Don't throw effort after foolishness." Some great advice. Hey, I'd like to say to you tonight, forget the car, you duffer, or the boat, or the money, or the career. Forget it, you duffer. Don't you throw money after foolishness. You don't know what it's going to cost you in the end. Are we throwing time and effort in the wrong direction? Well, verse 24 tells us, Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner. And the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Amma, which is before Giah, by the road to the wilderness of Gibeon. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became a unit and took their stand on top of a hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? How long will it be then until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren?" I mean, this is folly. This is madness. Why are men dying over this? This was a good idea gone mad. And Joab said, "As God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren." They give up the chase. Joab gives up the chase, but he doesn't yet know about what's happened to his brother Asahel. And so Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still and did not pursue Israel anymore, nor did they fight anymore. Then Abner and his men went on all that night through the plain, crossed over the Jordan, and went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. They crossed the Jordan, they returned home. And so Joab returned from pursuing Abner, and when he had gathered all of the people together, there were missing of David's servants 19 men and Asahel. But the servants of David had struck down of Benjamin and Abner's men 360 men who died. In all, the death count was 380 lives were lost over foolishness, over male egos out of control. It's probably happened a time or two since. Verse 32. Then they took up Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at daybreak. Joab buries his brother Asahel, but trust me, he doesn't forget who murdered him. And a lethal bitterness begins to brew and stir in the heart of Joab toward Abner. Beware of bitterness. Well, chapter 3 summarizes the 2 years that the kingdom was divided. Now, there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. The house of David loved God. David was anointed by God. The house of Saul lacked God's blessing. No wonder David grew stronger and Saul grew weaker. And the same is true of us. Those who are anointed by the Spirit, those who live under the influence of the Holy Spirit, will grow stronger and stronger, whereas those who walk in the flesh, who trust in their own energies, in their own efforts, they become weaker and weaker. Well, sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess. His second, Chileab, by Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. Notice this. Absalom was born of a pagan princess. David probably married Maacah to seal a peace treaty with her father. It was prudent politically, but it violated God's law. You remember Deuteronomy 17 had prohibited the king of Israel from building a harem and multiplying wives. And David's disobedience here will sow seeds of rebellion in the heart of his sons. We'll see that come to fruition later. Well, verse 4 continues his family. The fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron. In fact, David will end up with 8 wives, 19 sons, and there were probably many daughters, but we're told of only one, Tamar. Well, chapter 3 tells us of the power struggle that occurs in Mahanaim in the court of Saul's son, Ishbosheth. Now, it was so, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner was strengthening his hold on the house of Saul. Ishbosheth's weakness had provided opportunity for Abner's ambition. And Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Ai. So Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone in to my father's concubine?" Now I wonder what was going on in Abner's mind. He had spent his whole life faithfully serving a madman named Saul. Now he's going to extraordinary efforts to prop up a weakling named Ishbosheth. And I am sure that he thought, "I've done all this, and all I'm getting is a military pension. I deserve more than this." Guys, be careful. When someone who's supposed to be a servant develops an entitlement mentality, danger is on the horizon. This can happen to a pastor. This can happen to a church leader. "Oh, nobody appreciates the sacrifices I've made. Oh, I'm just going to take a few perks for myself." And he starts out grabbing the glory and then maybe some gold and perhaps even some girls. Evidently, that's what happened to Abner. He ended up shacking up with Saul's concubine. Now, when King Ishbosheth confronts Abner, the old general bristles up. Verse 8. Then Abner became very angry at the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? I've been doing all this. You just treat me like a dog's head. Today I show loyalty to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hand of David. And you charge me today with a fault concerning this woman? May God do so to Abner and more also, if I do for David as the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba." In other words, Abner is so angry he jumps sides. If Ishbosheth doesn't appreciate him, he'll just fight for David and he'll help David win this kingdom from the north to the south, from Dan to Beersheba. It'll all be David's. He'll see to it. And he could not answer Abner another word because he feared him. Ishbosheth wouldn't stand up to him. Then Abner sent messengers on his behalf to David saying, "Whose is this land?" saying also, "Make your covenant with me, and indeed my hand shall be with you to bring all Israel to you." And David said, "Good, I will make a covenant with you. But one thing I require of you, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face." So David sent messengers to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Give me my wife Michal, whom I betrothed to myself, for 100 foreskins of the Philistines." And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Paltiel, the son of Laish. You recall that whole story, that Saul had promised Michal to David. You know, if he brought him the 100 foreskins of the Philistines, and of course, David doubled that number. He brought him 200. Still trying to figure out how he presented him to him. Yeah, I know. But now that you know, Saul, what he did is he went and he took Michal away from David. After giving him to them, after them consummating their marriage, Saul then comes in and takes Michal away from David. Just a cruel attempt to just jab him, just to destroy him. Well, now David comes back, and he's wanting to see a token of genuineness on the part of Abner. So he says, "Bring Michal to me," and look what happens. David now does to somebody else what was done to him. They go and they find Michal and they take her away from her husband and now bring him back to David. Michael's getting passed around like a football, it seems. Well, then her husband went along with her to Bahurim, weeping behind her. And so Abner said to him, "Go return," and he returned. What a sad picture that was. I imagine we could talk about that for a while. But now Abner had communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, "In time past, you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it, for the Lord has spoken of David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and the hand of all their enemies.'" And Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin. Abner's rallying all of the northern kingdom now. He's trying to bring all of Israel under the banner of David. He's trying to pull them away from Ish-bosheth now, and he wants to bring the whole nation's allegiance to David. "Well, then Abner also went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron all that seemed good to Israel and the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Then Abner said to David, 'I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you and that you may reign over all that your heart desires.' And so David sent Abner away, and he went in peace." David embraces his old nemesis, Abner. He sees a change of heart in Abner, and he sees this as a way of consolidating the nation. But all this hope of reconciliation is about to be spoiled by some bitterness. At that moment, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the troops that were with him had come, they told Joab, saying, "Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he sent him away, and he has gone in peace." And Joab came to the king and said, "What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away, and he has already gone?" In other words, we should have killed him. "Surely you realize that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you, to know you're going out and you're coming in, and to know all that you are doing." Boy, Joab was not nearly as forgiving as David was. And here, a chance of reconciliation, a chance for reconciling brothers, a chance of bringing competing sides together is spoiled by a root of bitterness. I wonder if that's happening in your life. I wonder if there's some old enemies that maybe have made gestures towards you that they would like to reconcile. You know, they'd like to bury the hatchet. They'd like to come back together and be your friend again. But you won't let it happen because of that bitterness in your heart. You need to repent. You need to ask God to take it away. You need to be willing to forgive and love and be willing to receive that brother back. If he's sincere, if he means well, you need to be willing to receive him back. Well, when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sirah, but David did not know it. Now, when Abner had returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately. And when Joab walks up to Abner, he's got a dagger hidden in his sleeve. And there he stabbed him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Verse 28. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, "My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper, who leans on a staff or falls by the sword, or who lacks bread." Now David utters this curse on the house of Joab. But you got to understand, all David really does to punish Joab is just utter some words. He doesn't really take any action to discipline his own general. And for the first time, we see a dangerous tendency in David that will haunt him for the rest of his life. He fails to discipline the people around him. It starts with Joab, but we'll see it again when his children grow up and they start to do evil deeds. He fails to discipline his own children again, and it eventually creates a real problem for him in his kingdom. He should have punished Joab, but he didn't. And so Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had killed their brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. Joab got his revenge, but David now has a political crisis on his hands. Think of what's happening here. Word is spreading throughout Israel that Abner tried to defect, but David killed him. Nobody's going to be willing to trust David now as king. This chance of reconciling the kingdom is in peril. Well, David needs to do some damage control. Verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." I'm sure Joab was smiling on the inside. But David made him join in this display of public mourning, and they all ripped their clothes and they all mourned for Abner. And King David followed the coffin, which reminds me of the casket that slipped out of the hands of the pallbearers, and it started sliding down this grassy hill, and you know, it jumped the curb, and believe it or not, it headed straight for the town pharmacy. The casket crashed right through the plate glass window of the pharmacy, and it stopped right at the counter. The funeral director's chasing the casket, and so he runs into the pharmacy, and he clears his throat, and he says to the pharmacist, "Wow, I just want to thank you for stopping my coffin." And King David followed the coffin. David mourned the loss of Abner just as you are mourning this joke. And so they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. Abner received a state funeral. And part of it was David's deep grief over the death of Abner. Also part of it was to show the nation that David had no intention to kill Abner, that it had been done by other men, not David. And the king sang a lament over Abner and said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put into fetters. As a man falls before wicked men, so you fail." Then all the people wept over him again. And when all the people came to persuade David to eat food while it was still day, David took an oath saying, "God do so to me and more also if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." He's fasting that day. Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, since whatever the king did pleased all the people. David was quite popular. For all the people in all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's intent to kill Abner, the son of Ner. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, are too harsh for me. The Lord shall repay the evildoer according to his wickedness." You see, David understood the wisdom of the proverb, "Do not gloat when your enemy falls. When he stumbles, do not let your heart rejoice." This was how David had reacted to the death of Saul, and this is now how he reacts to the assassination of Abner. When Saul's son heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost heart. This was Ishbosheth. And all Israel was troubled. Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of troops. The name of one was Baana, and the name of the other Rechab. And the sons of Rimmon the Berethite, of the children of Benjamin. For Beeroth also was part of Benjamin, because the Berethites fled to Gittaim and have been sojourners there until this day. Now Abner's two captains, they realized that without their general, they're no match for David's army anyway. Their only hope now is to assassinate Ishbosheth so that the kingdom will be reunited. Verse 4 seems to be a sidebar, but it'll become very important a little later. We're told Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened, as she made haste to flee, that he fell. She dropped him, and he became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. Keep that in mind. Then the sons of Rimmon the Berethite, Rechab and Baana, set out and came at about the heat of the day, around noontime, to the house of Ishbosheth, who was lying on his bed at noon. It wasn't around noontime, evidently it was right at noon. And they came there all the way into the house as though to get wheat, and they stabbed him in the stomach. Just like Abner, Ishbosheth dies of a severe stomach ache. Then Rechab and Baana, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he was lying on his bed in his bedroom, and they struck him and killed him, beheaded him, and took his head, and were all night escaping through the plain. They were running to present the head of Ishbosheth to David. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron and said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and his descendants." Abner's captains think they're helping David get ahead. And I guess they were. But David answered Rechab and Baana, his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Berethite, and said to them, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all adversity, when someone told me, saying, 'Look, Saul is dead,' thinking to have brought good news, I arrested him and had him executed in Ziklag. The one who thought I would give him a reward for his news." He says, "You remember that Amalekite? You've come to me thinking you've done me a favor. I'm not pleased by this. You should have known this. How much more when wicked men have killed a righteous person in his own house on his bed? Therefore, shall I not now require his blood at your hand and remove you from the earth?" So David commanded his young men, and they executed him, cut off their hands and feet, and hanged them by the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner in Hebron. More heads roll in tonight's chapters than bowling balls on a Friday night. And there have been very few spares tonight. You notice that. Mostly strikes and a few gutters. Literally. Jesus taught us a better way of dealing with our enemies, didn't he? Than killing them and chopping their heads off and chopping off their feet and hands and hanging them on the wall. Jesus told us to love our enemies, to do good to those who persecute us and despitefully use us. Jesus taught us a better way. But we learn a lot by reading about these stories.
The book of 2 Samuel is a continuation of where 1 Samuel left off. Essentially, King Saul and all of his sons have been killed in battle, and everyone knows that David is meant to be king. Throughout this book, David has many successes as God grants him favor as king of Israel. But King David's not without fault either. There were some very grave areas of sin that David entered into, and it took a contrite heart of repentance for things to be resolved. This is a great lesson for you today, too. God can allow victories in your life, But when you're on that mountaintop, make sure to have an awareness that you're capable of failing, but just as easily as you were of succeeding. Keeping your focus and trust in God is key. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. To learn more about this ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? There's more information on service times and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to carrying on with this study in the book of 2 Samuel. Pastor Sandy has more to share about the life of David and those who were surrounding him, friends and foes. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.